So I should have Welcome to the Women's Game. I'm Jade, by the way. And I'm Lamona. And I forgot the rest of this because it's been a while and I'm still on London time. I'm really sleepy.
Me too, but you know, I've had like 17 cups of coffee.
Oh, shush him. It's just because I'm allergic to coffee. You don't always have to bring that up.
Okay, no. It's not because you're allergic. Why would I bring that? Would be hurtful. I'm not being.
Okay, alright, you're not being. Never mind. No. Not now. I'm taking it back.
Okay, yay!
Thank you.
We'll be back to loving each other. I love you, Winona.
Honestly?
Mad love and sign language.
Okay.
Books. Alright, books. We have books. We want the And I Thought series. And I Thought Divorce Was Bad with Other Life Lessons. And I Thought Being Grown Up Was Easy. And I Thought We Could Juggle. I could juggle it all. We can't, but try anyway. And I Thought I Did My Journey Alone. And I Thought He Was the One. Haven't we all been there? And then we did The Misfit Guides. The Misfit Guide, the Sassy Sweater Leaves Crooked Footprints, The Misfit Guide, Cocktail Soirees, and the LBD. Yes, the Little Black Dress. Okay, just for anyone out there that doesn't know. And the workbook, we have that, and we have the 25 hottest indie authors, advocates, and artists. Really?
Yeah, I'm doing it that way. What? Who didn't find the magazine? Keep going.
I'll come back to chaos. I don't understand.
Keep going. We have a lot of people in the room.
But I don't know what else you want me to say.
And we also have the TV show Just Right in Life.
The docu-series.
Okay. So you can watch it on Amazon and or on Channel 18 in California.
Okay. And also, you can check out anything that your ladies are doing and the charities and probably support on AndWeGoIt.com. And you can check out our books there, too, and also Amazon. All right. I think we're done because we have a lot of people in the room and we need to get it going.
So you're not here to hear about us, lovely guests. Would you like to introduce yourself, starting with Christine?
Hi, I'm Christine Merrill. I'm the author of 22-ish novels. I've lost count. My last one is A Kiss Away from Scandal, and my next one will be coming out in December, and it is How Not to Marry an Earl.
Interesting.
How Not to Marry what?
An Earl.
How not to marry an Earl.
That sounds interesting.
Okay. I was about to say something, but I'll keep that to myself. Axelrod?
Hi, I'm the next victim. Hi, I'm Dr. David Axelrod. I'm a Volusia County Poet Laureate. That's a resident in Daytona Beach, Florida. But I'm also the director of something called, and my shirt can show on screen, Creative Happiness Institute. It's a cultural arts organization. We get some funding, private and public. And with that, we do many writing events. We're doing, for instance, a big slam event in Port Orange on August 24th with big cash prizes. Slam Master Kevin Campbell will coordinate that, but I'll be there probably being a judge. Other than that, I'm a poet by art and I write whatever else I can get a contract to do. So I've had 23 books published. More recently, All Bowed by Nirala Press. Anyway, that's enough about me because we have many other talented people, and I'm looking forward to meeting them online on camera.
Okay, so thank you. It's Mr. Holman now, right? Okay,
Unless we messed it up and you're Dr. Holman, in which case we apologize.
No, I'm not Dr. Holman. My name is J.C. Holman. I'm the author of half a dozen books of creative fiction. Mostly very heavily researched stuff, and I'm actually in the kitchen of an archive in Florida as well at the moment. And I'm now working on a book about the man and the woman who are counted as the mother and father of gynecology.
Oh, all right. I know people laugh at the topic, but... It looks like an archive is, they expect a lot of books and things, but...
I'm in the kitchen. I'm stuffed away in the kitchen of the archive.
Okay, there we go.
While you're at it. Honestly, in my opinion, you're in the best part, because I like to eat a little bit more than I like to read. Just a titch more. Just a titch.
Okay, and then next is Luena Helena.
Hello, I am Luena Helena. I am the author of...
one-ish book. I like that when Christine said it. It's actually just one for now. It's Party of One, Single Success. There's the glare. Okay. And just kind of a guide to being a single success. Not just being single, being good at it. besides that, I also am a voiceover artist. I do voiceover recording and so on. I also have three dogs, who are miraculously being quiet right now, but I understand, Christine. And what else is there? I host a podcast, as the ladies mentioned. Hopefully they'll be my guests tomorrow. It's Creatively Speaking every Saturday, and we just talk to artists and creatives overall. I got really excited when I saw David's shirt. So we're glad you put that on, Dr. Axelrod, Creative Happiness. Just anything with creative and creativity, and it gets me really excited. And also, yes, and both of you mentioned you were in Florida, and specifically Dr. Axelrod mentioned he was in Volusia County, which probably is just like, oh, well, for most people. But I used to live in Flagler, so I know exactly where you are. I used to live in Palm Coast, little town up the road there. So we might have been neighbors at some point. But now I'm in California, another little town most people haven't heard of, Calipatria. But we're about 2 hours from San Diego, which is more well known. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. Any other questions, feel free to ask. And I'm looking forward to this chat. It's already turning out to be a lot of fun.
Can I just say that I love it when other people introduce themselves?
Yes.
There's no way I would have said everything right.
They say everything so nicely. And there's the fabulous Christine. So this year we have thought to do what? Talk about the process of writing. And because I'm Brandy. Hello, Brandy.
I know, okay. I'm stealth entry. I'd
like to introduce yourself. Brandy just popped up, you guys, so would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Brandy Miller. I actually do a lot of things. And one of them is write, and one of them is teach writing, and one of them is coaching writing. And I'm actually working on finishing up, yay, my newest book, which is called Write Your Book. And it's going to be really good. I'm very excited. I just got finished with the last piece of it yesterday. So, squeal happy.
Yes, squeal happy. We like squeal happy. Okay, so this year, the Writers Roundtable, we are going to discuss the process of writing. And since we have nonfiction writers, fiction writers, and just poets and everything here, this is going to be very fun.
So, can I please start off with a question? Because I get this a lot, like on Facebook things and chats and stuff. How long is it supposed to take to write a book? I remember I answered once and I said 13 hours and they were like, it's unbelievable, but I did it because I had a
we had to get it done. Deadline.
We forgot our deadline. Yeah, so we did it in 13 hours. Yeah. But how long does it really take to write a book to be a professional and good at it?
It depends on your writing speed, to be perfectly honest. Every writer can write. I mean, I've written books over a coffee table over 2 days. And they're like substantial books. They're not like fluff pieces. So it really depends on how nailed down your process is and what you're writing. I find it harder to write fiction in 2 days than I do nonfiction.
Can I ask Mr. Holman, since you've been in? Oh,
no,
go ahead, Dr.
Axelrod. I was going to say, actually, Mr. Holman will pick up on it. I mentioned poetry as my art form, probably because when I was a little kid, I was a slow reader, and poems take less time to read. It seems they take less time to write, because I can write in a little notebook. I still write by hand and build up, call it a journal or otherwise, kind of a mine I can go back to and get those kernels, those ideas. And I might spend a day thereafter or other periods of time polishing a poem. But when I did my nonfiction book, An As Told To and a Critical Biography of a Pioneer Woman's Rights Advocate, Merlin Stone, whose own book sold well over 1 million copies, When God Was a Woman, that book I rushed to get done. And it took a half. And I'm so saw Mr. Holman doing archival research and writing about what I'd be correct in calling it a critical biography. Such books might take years to properly research and make the scholarship, but the bridge between articles and the as-told-to narrative I did, even that, sitting with the person telling his story, the life partner of Rolling Stone, took 3 months just to get the story started, and again, months more to polish. It is a variable. With other authors, I'd love to hear how you work.
Mr. Holman, since he's referred to you like 3 times in that, as like the little, like, what do you call it, as a citation notes, would you like to rebut?
But I agree that it depends on what you're writing, and everybody's got their own different style as well. I don't think there would be one answer. I can only really speak for myself. My books have taken longer as I've gone further and further into my career. They take longer and longer, and I've often told students that if writing is getting more torturous for you, it's probably a good sign that you're bringing more of your own sort of inner ruthlessness to bear on your writing, and that's probably a good thing. But in general, for me anyway, I think of about 20 months. So every time I've signed a contract, I've insisted on 20 months from the time of the signing of the contract to the delivery of the manuscript. And usually there's going to be a good bit of work prior to the signing of contract. So 2 years ballpark, I would say.
I love that term you just used. Inner ruthlessness, is that correctly?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Christine, did you hear that?
Yes. I allow 6 months, and the next one had better take 3, because I'm on deadline. But there are some books I've been working on for years, and I think that it's a cross between ruthlessness and doubt. You learn what you need to put in the book, and you get really particular about doing it right, and that takes time. I mean, sometimes the inspiration just comes, and then you have a book, but God, I wish that would come soon.
I believe I read somewhere that procrastination is part of the creative process, and I believe that mental procrastination for the inspiration, that's what it is. Luana, would you like to say something last on this?
Sure, yeah, for actually physically writing the book itself and finishing it, it took me between 7 and 10 days. I did kind of this shut-in, you know, turned off media, all of that, just went into my room with applesauce and microwavable popcorn and peas and, you know, no pets allowed. And, you know, after a week, there was a manuscript. But as I often tell people, the introduction for my book was written like 15 years before the book, just that I didn't know I was writing the introduction at the time. You know, I had this weird experience in a restaurant, and rather than brood about it, I just kind of jotted down my little angry thoughts about the host who led me to my table, and then I put it away, and then that turned out to be the introduction to the book, and then the rest of it was written in 2015, even though the intro was written in 2000. So I could say 15 years, but, you know, just to bring it to completion and put the rest on it took me a week. But that's with no, like, you know, not in normal life, like going to work and coming home, just kind of focusing 100% of the time on it. So I think that's a process that works for me. You know, it may not be for everyone else. It may be doing different jobs and needing a break from things every once in a while, but yeah, about a week for a short nonfiction guide where, you know, the thoughts have already been flowing and you just need to get them on paper. If the inspiration is already there, I think it can be physically done in a week. But as everyone kind of said, it depends on what you're writing and, you know, maybe how passionate you are about it and all the different variables. But yeah, so it varies, I guess, would be the final answer.
Okay, I know a ton of people are happy to have that answer.
Yes. I'm already counting people in my head. They're gonna be like, oh, okay, great. You know, I'm not a small writer.
going slow. And I'm like, no, not anyway. No. So, Jay, did you have a question? Because I have three.
Okay, go ahead and ask your one, and then I'll have one.
Okay. So my other question was, what is the greatest challenge that you guys have writing? Because, I mean, there's a lot of people in here that are on deadlines, and then there's some indie folks, which we are part of.
Indie!
So we put ourselves on deadlines. So how do you guys deal with deadlines, and the indie people, how do you deal with setting yourself your own deadlines?
Good question. My biggest challenge actually isn't even related to deadlines. My biggest challenge is that I often get a vision in my head of where I want the book to go and what I want the outcome to be. But then I get afraid that I'm not going to be able to deliver on that vision. It's kind of like, you know, being afraid that you're not quite a good enough artist to draw the thing that you see in your head, right? And so that sort of slows me down and trips me up because I want that vision to be what the reader experiences, but I'm not sure about my ability to translate it. So then, you know, that slows me down. But as far as deadlines go, I don't really put myself on too many deadlines, to be honest, which probably is a bad thing. I should probably have more deadlines. But there you go. That's my answer. That's the benefit of being an indie. I don't have to follow deadlines if I don't want to.
It is a lovely thought.
Anyway, well, I will be so fortunate as to be on deadline. That implies that at least we have a contract or we have a publisher interested enough. I find a deadline certainly motivates me because I don't want to break my contract or my word. But I'm working, for instance, with a young poet. I mean by that a 15-year-old young woman, talented, enjoys writing. And our intention is to bring out, with a grant I have for such projects, her first book. It'll be 24 at a minimum, 28, 32-page staple book, chapbook. And when I met with her over the weekend, I said, now you've already got 24 poems, but we want to have 40 or 50, I would hope at least. Now, she writes frequently, but my point to her and to myself is you want to have the very best you can do, and so you need a big selection to pick from. So I write every day, as often I write poetry, but a lot of it I myself know, speaking for myself, not for my student, a lot of it is filler. You know, it's keeping the machine oiled, it keeps the words flowing. Some of it I type up, some of it I might bring to friends for a casual evening, but it ain't going to be in a book because I hold myself to that higher standard, and a publisher may have other format or expectations. So as for partly how long it takes and what my own creative process is, I don't want to be so hard a critic on a student, let alone on myself, that I never type anything up, I'm not satisfied. But some days, you know, you talk about inspiration, you write something down and you went, wow, that's better than filler. And other days, well, I just work along. Always wish I were inspired.
I saw that you guys are turning writing right now into like a real job.
I like it.
I like it. It's like some days you come to work and you're like, I'm doing my job today. And some days you come to work and you go, yes, for the paycheck. I'm earning hours for a paycheck. Thanks for that. All right, anyone else want to answer on this one?
Well, my challenge mainly is the constant fight between inspiration and procrastination. Like, great ideas come, and you're like, oh, you get so excited. It's like, okay, this is going to be my next book. I mean, I'm actually co-writing my next book with my sister, and we were on vacation, and we're like, oh, this would be a good idea, and we started. I mean, if a recorder was running when we were having this conversation, the book would have been written already. But we had all these great ideas, and this could be a chapter, and this could be a chapter, and, you know, and it's like, okay, let's go home and get it down. And then it's been, you know, a few months, and, you know, we started a Google Doc, and then we shared the Google Doc, and time has gone by, you know. So.
What's a Google Doc?
Oh, yeah, it's a document that you can create in Google, and then it allows you to just kind of share your work, so she can write some things, I can comment, and we can go back and forth like that instead of, you know, emailing a Word document back and forth. So it's shared online in the Google Cloud. So, you know, we have all the tools in place, but then it's just like, okay, all those great ideas we had, let's bring them back. Let's, you know, so I think that's the big challenge for me is kind of maybe as soon as the idea hits, like, you go ahead and write it. Like, and then as Dr. Axelrod had mentioned, everything isn't necessarily for a book. You know, even just I try to blog in between just to keep ideas flowing. And then a blog idea, a topic will come to mind. Like this morning, I was reading through, you know, doing some Bible reading, meditating and so on. A good idea came and it's like, okay, I'm going to blog on that today. And then I had about an hour before the show. It's like, well, no, let me just clear my mind, get on this program. And after I log off, I'm going to write that blog, you know. So we'll see by the end of the day if I write a blog. But things like that happen. It's just that. So it's just that inspiration versus procrastination and a little bit of what Brandy said. After a while, you start to overthink it. Like the first idea is a great idea. But then once you say, well, you know what? There are probably 10 books out on that. That's not original. That's not new. Nobody wants to, you know, then you start to beat it down to just forget it. So I think that's my biggest challenge. And, you know, maybe some other people can relate to that, but just pushing through it anyway and putting it on paper or on screen or whatever you have to do to get it out.
So now we have Christine and Mr. Holman that haven't said anything on this. Do you guys wish to answer this one?
Oh, sure. I mean, right now, just avoiding distractions is the hardest thing. I mean, there's the news, there's the TV, there's, you know, the housework, there's everything else that part of my brain says needs to be taken care of right now. And then there's the actual work, which involves me sitting in a chair and just living inside my own head. And once I break into that barrier and just shut the world out, things go much faster. Other than that, it's like, the less you want to write, the more you actually have to write to get the kernels of goodness that David was talking about and getting rid of the filler. I mean, there has to be a lot of junk on the page before you get to the good stuff.
Mr. Holman, I feel bad because you're like the only creative nonfiction right now on this answer. So represent the whole world.
That's totally fine. I think for me, the short answer would be discipline. And the longer answer would be that what does that really mean? And I think what it means is the willingness and the ability to organize your life socially and economically so that you can dedicate the best hours of every day to your work, at whatever stage it's in, whether that's researching something or executing the actual prose or whatever. And I think it's much easier said than done, both, you know, internally for our own internal psychology to, as Christine said, block out external stimuli, but also being sure that you know, you're willing to make the kinds of necessary sacrifices economically, or you're just willing to surround yourself with the kind of people who understand why it is that you need to pull yourself away for, you know, X amount of hours per day, and accept that. And sometimes that means executing a different kind of discipline just in terms of how you organize your whole life.
Jace, do you have that question? If not, I have one. Oh.
See, I was all, like, involved in it. So what are you guys, like, best moments so far from your career, your path that you've chosen for your life? What is your best moment? The moment where you were like, yes, I'm so happy I chose this career.
And there's silence. Oh, you guys have had some moments.
That's
right.
You know, the writer's life, a lot of people think, particularly with poets, you're going to be starving somewhere, locked away in a garret. And indeed, some statistical studies show poets are noticeably depressive. But, you know, if work is having to be somewhere or having to do something, then a lot of the time, even when I was at work, it didn't feel like work, because being a writer is quite a trip, not to mention a pretty good tax write-off. You know, you can travel the world doing your research, you can write that off against a different or another income, there's a little bit of, the business of the arts in that. But I think the best moments are when, as much as anything, I meet other writers and we're of a like mind. We really believe that if you're creative, it helps you be well, it helps you be healthy. And instead of moaning about not having a publisher, we do that sharing as often publicly. And that brings people together as compared to arguing and separating each other. So that's a constant high, and it doesn't work at all if that's the level where you dwell as a writer. That's a little pie in the sky, but I really feel that way. That's the basis for the Creative Happiness Institute. It's that universal energy that we access through our writing. And when I see the smiles, even a more serious expression on my colleagues on the screen, I feel like I'm in good company. Hey, that's a high.
Anyone else?
Well, I think some of my greatest moments actually have been when I can finally get somebody's book out the door and they're holding a copy of it, and you can just see how excited they are to have finally been able to get their book out of their head and onto the page and out into the world, and they know they're able to make a difference. Like, that is so rewarding for me to help them through that process. It's kind of what I live for, so...
Good for you.
For me, it's it's kind of a tie. When the actual writing is going well, when I'm really in the zone, that's pretty much like being on Space Mountain all day. It is so much fun. When you come up with ideas and you have no idea where they came from, and they fit in with the rest of the book, and you know, suddenly it's like a light goes on and you understand what you've been writing. That's just the best. That keeps me coming back through all of the parts where, all the days where it doesn't work. And then the days when I've actually met people who've read my books, and generally it's people reading romances while having chemotherapy or collecting piles of them to take to their cousin who's sick, and where I really know I'm making a difference for people and I'm making them feel good. That also makes up for all the rough spots.
Yeah, my answer is a little similar to Christine's, I think, in that I would say that, you know, just pulling off a really perfect sentence, writing a sentence that just can't be improved any further once you get to that point, just in the process, that's just really an amazing feeling. But then as well, and I had the second part of Christine's answer, I had a specific instance when I got an email from a guy who, you know, told me he'd been waiting for several years to write me about a book of mine, and he'd been waiting because he'd been in prison. And he'd been just reading my book over and over and over to help him endure that time. And that sort of put the whole idea of the fan letter or the person who reads your book into a different light. And to think that I could produce something that would help someone else endure, that was a really good feeling.
Wow. Dang. At this point, can you even top that? I was going to say never mind now.
No, I mean, I think that is a really important part of writing because, as we know, sometimes it can be an isolated thing. We can all be in our own little world. And just to know that there is a bright spot, sometimes people just need that encouragement to know, hey, it's going to be better. It's going to be fine. You're going to write that perfect sentence one day. I've been with like two of them in my whole life, and that's amazing.
I think one of them was in a high school paper.
It was. One of them was in a high school paper. I got an A on that paper, and that was a hard one A. And I was excited. It was about my dad, and I was telling people about how awesome a man he is and how he overcame his dyslexia in the 50s and just everything. Jesse, I'm going to talk about my one moment. And his like alcoholic father to be the man that I just want to be. Like, I want to be him when I grow up. I wish I could have his compassion for the world.
Okay.
And it got me an A, though, so high five on that. I never get A's on papers.
Since the moderator actually joined the conversation, Luana, do you have a moment?
Yeah, it's
pretty much similar. I guess we kind of share the same highs. I love when I have those, I call them divine downloads. That, where did that come from? I know that's not me. That did not come from me. I don't even use those words. Wow, okay, let me write it down before I forget it, you know, kind of moment. So I really enjoy having those. And other great moments for me are just bringing everything to completion. Like when you hit send, whether it's on Create Space or, you know, you guys might send off to publishers and get that approval or whatever. But you know, just to know you're done, there is like being on the other side of Brandy's high moment, being that writer with like, oh my gosh, it's in print, or, you know, there's an ebook version, I can download it and read it on my Kindle, you know, not that I need to read it, I wrote it, but I just want to see it, you know, and oh, there's an audio book, you know, you just get really excited about it's finished, it is finished. So those moments of completion, and then just those divine downloads, I call them, where things just come to you and you're entrusted with that information, and it's now you feel the responsibility of getting it out exactly the way you heard it, because someone needs to read it. Maybe somebody in prison, like Mr. Allman said, but somebody has to read it exactly the way you heard it, and then you kind of get very sober in the moment and, you know, curb your enthusiasm and take the job seriously and go with it.
Can I say my problem?
Oh, your problem. Oh, you can say your problem. I'm sorry, Malona.
It is so trivial, but, you know, I'm a narcissist, so I have to say it. It was when I first saw my own reality TV show.
Docu-series
on Amazon. And I was like, what? I can press a button. And then I watched myself again in England. I was like,
okay.
All right. Okay. Well, nothing to do with the
one.
Nothing.
Are you done? Okay. My last question is famous. It is the last question. We have, he said 25 minutes. This is the
do
last.
Do you guys have five more minutes?
No.
I do.
We have five more minutes. Yes, I get to ask my question. I wrote it down. Hold on. My last question before we chose working the progress process deck was, so when you have like a contract, how do you get one? And then B, do you feel that you sell out if you use your work writing for money?
Oh, definitely not. I am totally over the money. And I have said, you know, when my editor particularly says, what motivates you to write? I always say, money. because, you know, they just think I'm going to do this for love. They're not going to pay me. And I got my first contract by winning a contest. I entered the Romance Writers of America Golden Heart contest, which they're just axing this year, which is a sad thing for me. But it was a contest for a completed unpublished manuscript, and it was judged by editors. And my editor found me through that. I won the contest. I didn't hear anything for a couple weeks, and then I got this magic email asking to have me under contract. And it all went from there.
Anybody else? No? Okay, so my great question wasn't that great after all.
Well, I don't have contract to deal with, so that part I can't answer. What was the second half of the question?
If you use your writing for money.
Yes, I do, actually. My writing is what makes me money. And no, I don't have any guilt over that, because I know what money is. Money is nothing more than a sign of two things. It's first, the amount of trust that somebody has in the results that you can give them. And the second part of that is the commitment that they have to getting those results. So, like, for instance, you're not going to pay a dentist to get a root canal if you don't need one, because you have no commitment to getting one. Doesn't matter how good the dentist is. You know, it's not a reflection of their ability. You just have no commitment to getting that result. But if you've got a abscess tooth, you have all kinds of commitment to getting that taken care of, and you will definitely pay the money. So when Christine gets paid for her books, what somebody is lacking in their life is romance. And she's helping to fill that need. And the reason that her readers keep coming back to her and keep being willing to pay her is that they know that she can consistently deliver the results that they want. So there's no guilt in that. It's a sign that she's doing the right thing.
Really well put. You know, to be an advocate. usual, people think poets starve. I take great pride in the fact that I have 22 books of poems, and none of them ever lost the publisher money. At least we saw them break even. Of course, it was always helpful if I happened to be teaching creative writing, and I required my students to buy the book. Publisher a lot. And the best advance I got was for the nonfiction book I did. Merlin Stone remembered about that pioneer women's rights author, which was a natural because her work was standard in women's studies and there was a great deal of interest. So the publishers, middle-level mainstream publishers, the Welland Worldwide, paid a wonderful royalty. And then I had the wonderful conundrum. Shall I, as usual, loan or give my four children some money because we're always broke, kids and I. Or I went out and bought a collectible car, which I keep in a small garage and drive around. And people stop and say, what kind of car is that? I said, it's a car that my writing bought me.
Love it.
Biden, and I'm all the happier because I, you know, there's no sweeter money than book money.
It's the writer-mobile.
Making book. That's probably a better way to make money. But book money, oh, I love to get some.
I think that I don't think it's selling out to be thinking about money. I think just from a pragmatic point of view, everybody who's a writer is necessarily in the business. You're in a business, and the sooner that you recognize that it's a business and start thinking partially like a business person, is probably going to be good for you. I think the concern about what the profit motive does to writers of ambition is an important thing to bear in mind and to think about. You know, you still have to figure out how to negotiate the economic climate of your time and recognize that the book business is not what it was 50 or 60 years ago, and that is going to have an impact on you, whether you decide to self-publish or whether you decide to go the more traditional route and find an agent who's going to represent your work and try to sell you. I think, you know, that something that young writers don't often think about much is really what it means to sell your work. You know, what it means when you sell your book is that it is not yours anymore. It doesn't belong to you anymore. And understanding exactly what that means and how profound that is important. I mean, it's still your name on the cover. It's still your book, in a sense. But the rights to it now belong to somebody else. And it's just important to bear that in mind, both in terms of what it means you need to understand about the business and in terms of how that might impact your own ambition as a writer.
Well, I will interject a little bit, because I think part of the problem is that sales... A lot of people have this idea that sales is pushing something on somebody, but in reality, sales is an invitation that you make to somebody else to partner with them in helping them achieve a desired outcome. So, for instance, when Christine is selling her romance book, she's partnering with that person and helping them achieve their desired fulfillment of their romance need. And when you're writing your creative nonfiction, you know, you're partnering with the person who reads your book and helping them achieve a goal. It's all about, if your attitude of service, then you're not going to have as much trouble bringing in the money. If you're focused on the money, you'll have a lot of trouble bringing in the money, because people don't want to be used for money. They want to be loved, not used. And I think that's the hard part that you have when you first start a business, is that you're so focused, or start writing books, right? You're so focused on getting that money coming in that you can tend to focus on the money instead of the service. But if you're focused on serving the people who read your books, you won't have as much trouble getting the money coming in.
Well, I'll wrap it up and make it unanimous. I definitely agree. There's no guilt with earning money for your writing. It's a valuable service, as Randy has been sharing. And I think once you know that you took the time, you created a valuable and a high quality product. You know, you didn't just rush it and it's full of typos and you heard this is a good hustle and a way to make money and you threw it out there. You know, you followed the steps and you put a quality product out there with valuable information or an interesting plot, story, whatever genre you chose, then I think it is a valuable exchange. You put something out and somebody is paying whatever price for it. And there should be no guilt and no feeling of selling out, just, you know, pretty much walking in your purpose as a writer. That's what you do. And then you are connecting with readers who need books to read, and you wrote books, so it's, you know, the perfect partnership. And that's the second question. The first one, I do not have any contracts, and I know Christine got hers by a contest, and if any of the gentlemen would like to share how they got their first contracts, it would be interesting to me to see if that's a possible future route for me as a writer.
I'll tell my story. I studied fiction in graduate school at the University of Iowa and Johns Hopkins, and published a bunch of short stories, wrote a novel that didn't sell, and then wrote a book proposal for a nonfiction book that also didn't sell, but had one editor who liked the proposal enough that he wanted to see something else. And that's where the first book wound up coming from, and you know that what I think that quick narrative skips past is you know, a lot of the pain that was involved in writing a book that didn't sell and writing a proposal that didn't sell. Those were really soul crushing events, and I think that you know, that's more the rule and the exception that everybody goes through, that the proverbial novel in the drawer, and you know, and having that moment when your agent, if you're lucky enough to get one, you know, says to you, mind it to me, well, do you have any other ideas? You know, that's a big part of the writing life. And even though I've managed to sell 6 out of 7 book proposals, that first one didn't sell. And that was an important lesson.
Yeah.
That's depressing. I have a poem I'm going to write about that because it just came to my head as you were talking.
I do have several manuscripts in my drawer that will never see the light of day. And looking back on them, they really were horrible. There was a reason that those didn't sell. So yeah, the one that got me the contract was probably book 3. Lots of words.
Yeah, I've written half a dozen books before I wrote the first one that got published. And that was, I'm glad that those other 6 didn't actually get published, because, you know, they're not. I look back at it and I'm like, wow, you know, there's enough plot holes here to drive a Mack truck through, so, you know. It's about learning your craft. I think those first few books actually really help you hone your voice and develop your skill and start finding your way of delivering that makes you unique.
Okay, so last question. Where can people find you? And thank you, Mr. J.C. Holman. What's next? I told you I was taking it.
So do you want to go first here?
Oh, no, remember you said, you're supposed to ask what's next, and I said, I'm taking that, Mr. Holman. I will use that now forever. So whoever wants to go first. No pressure. So where can people find you, and then what's next?
Okay, so I'll go first. I can be found at my website, jcholman.com, jcholman.com. And I'm in the middle of what is going to be, I hope, the book of my career. And so what is next is going to be the continued process of putting that out. And in the meantime, I'll be working on essays. I've got a couple of reviews that are due, and those kinds of occasional writings. But the big book project is what comes next.
Thank you.
And for me,
can you give us one line, like one thing you would tell a writer that was just starting off, just like one sentence?
Is that me?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, sure. I think the one thing that can't be taught in any kind of creative writing program is discipline. So I would say cultivate discipline.
Thank you, Mr. Holm. Thank you. Randy, you're just next on my screen.
Oh.
Next.
I think Luanna actually wanted to go next.
Fantastic, Luanna.
Okay, thank you. I am at luannahelena.com, LuannaHelena, my first and last name.com, and you can find my books there and then other projects that I do. As I mentioned, I'm a voiceover artist, and I also narrate other authors' audiobooks, so those are available there as well. And what's next for me is I'm going to blog today, as promised. And then in the not-so-far future, hopefully, book number two, All the World's a Stage, which is just kind of parallels between actors' lives, rehearsals, everything, and how that plays out in our real lives, you know, taking the discipline of theater and applying it to everyday real life. So hopefully that's coming out, I'm going to say, this year. I predict and declare and decree it will be done in 2018. I'm making my own deadline by December 31st, 2018. Book number two.
There you go. And your question. What advice would you give a writer?
An aspiring writer, I would say, just write. You know, I spent a little time in the army, and then I had trouble with just push-ups, and I used to go to my drill sergeant, what do I have to do to get better at push-ups? And he would just say, do push-ups. I said, I can't. I do one, I fall down. He's like, well, just keep doing that. One will turn to two, and eventually it turned to 12, which is what I needed to pass my PT test. But so, yeah, write. You know, stare at the back page, the blank screen, and just write, my name is, and I was born, and I'm, you know, just write about your cat, you know, just get it out there, and every day will get better, and, you know, until you lead up to those manuscripts, and that's, you guys were mentioning, you can look back at now, and, you know, you'll just get better that way, so write, the end.
Love it.
All right, what I'm currently working on is, that I'm so squee happy about, is the actually write your book. I am just putting that finishing touch on it, so it should be ready to go. I'm going to launch it in time for our Las Vegas Experience Writers Retreat in October, so that's exciting. And then also I'm going to actually commit to finish my If Words Could Kill book by October, because that has just been a project that's been going on way too long, and I want it off my plate, and I'm excited to bring it out to the world anyway, so it's just like one of those things. So those are the two big things that I'm working on right now.
Okay, and good.
What would you call aspiring writer just coming out? Right.
Stop expecting perfection with a rough draft. Write the biggest pile of crap you have ever written and be okay with it being the biggest pile of crap you've ever written. You can always go back and edit later. But if you don't get that first book out of you, you won't get the next book out of you either.
Cool. I like it. Mr. Axelrod? Dr. Axelrod, I'm sorry.
And $5 ketchup coffee at Starbucks. The doctor was fun. By the way, I also went to Iowa. It was a great place to be as a writer. So there are two places you can look me up, and everything connects out of that, including my email address. But if you go to poetrydoctor.org, you know, one word, poetrydoctor.org, or the creativehappiness.org, which takes you to the nonprofit group. There are calendars there where appearances that I'll be at and events that I present. And I guess what's next is what is next every morning or sometimes late into the night. I'll just keep writing. I'd love to see Narala Publishers, my publishers of my new and selected All Vows, tell me that they're going to a second edition. I've had some second editions or at least second printings, so you could always, well, you know, read the work. It's what others said. It's a great satisfaction to know that your writing has a life of its own and people pick it up and actually read it. but I'm just pleased to be with these two wonderful women. I'm going to be a women's rights advocate and say that on my screen, our two hosts are labeled the ladies, but I think of them as smart and able and very generous in having us here together on a video blog, a video, will we call it a podcast? And I want to thank them for letting us have What's Next, some of these great opportunities. Thank you.
Absolutely.
You're making me blush.
I know, right?
So I'm happy I'm black. I'm like, I know.
Oh, and I forgot to mention that if you want to find my stuff, you can either go to 40daywriter.com, 40daywriter.com, or you can find it on Amazon. All my books are there.
Christine, last but not least.
Okay, you can find me at christine-merrill.com. I'm on Twitter as double cheese with a line between them. I have Christine Merrill Books on Facebook, and I am currently on Skillshare.com with some online writing classes and the Binge-Worthy Fiction Workshop.
Hey! Wow, you guys have had okay, so it's Brandy and Christine that came back from last year. You guys have done a lot. Everyone else, you guys were awesome the first time we got to interview you, so thank you so much for coming back.
Yeah, thank you guys for like coming and sharing this wonderful stuff with the writing community, because we'll be pushing it hard.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for having us.
But we could all simultaneously do what you're doing. How about a group blow kisses?
I just want to say real quickly, I find it amazing for every year that the people that actually say yes, and they're like, I would like to be on the Writers' Roundtable, and I'm like, with us? That's cool, but dang, you guys are awesome. You guys.
So, thank you guys for coming again, and you guys can find out everything your ladies are doing on andwethought.com, and you can check out Just Writing Life there, too. And remember,
to answer the question of what's next, we have the Thoughtful Book Festival on August 31st and the Las Vegas Writers Retreat on October 11th and 10th.
On andwethought.com, and just remember that wisdom is all around you.
You're open to finding it and accepting it. So peace and love, you guys, from Winona, who didn't even try to get her nails done.
And Jade, because I'm back!